sound exciting to you?
Yes, indeedy. That does sound exciting to me, Nate. Does that sound exciting to you?
You know what sounds exciting to me, Sean?
What's that? I don't know.
Another night of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Another Sunday night, little brother. You got that right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, listeners around the world, to the Mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Welcome. Hello, hello. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. I guess
hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, you ever wonder, Sean, people remember us from our ghost hunting days and when we used to go out there and test everything we possibly could. You know, we never tested, you know, we tested to see if ghosts could speak to us through the airwaves, but we never found a way to test whether or not maybe they hear us better over the airwaves. So maybe we're actually broadcasting to the other world.
Well, I think we definitely are. Remember that one guy we had come on the show? I forget who it was, but maybe it was another show we were listening to. Heck, I don't know.
It wasn't us. It was somebody. But we listened, therefore we're taking credit.
On some show somewhere across the nation. No, there was a guy that came on and said, apparently on the other side, it was something to do with the ITC project, Instrumental Transcommunication, with the dead speaking through the radios. Before it was cool, right? That's what us old-timers knew it as, ITC. Yeah. But now it's Ghost Box Research. But he came on... and he said that on the other side, after they die, these people build these ships and these communication devices and all this stuff. So apparently when we die, all of us become Harvard grads. It wouldn't be Harvard, would it? That's law.
Yeah. Well, they have a technical department at Harvard. Sure they do.
Yeah.
Now, they don't put as much money into it as, say, MIT.
A money counting department at Harvard.
I went to school for banking at Harvard.
The best I could ever do was something with the state in the title, or tech. It's Tech College.
Where did you go to school, Sean? Mm. Juliet. I've never heard of that college.
Yeah, Juliet Tech. No, I tried it. School wasn't for me, man. I did. I did the normal stuff more than you. High school, you know, eighth grade. And
when I was young, eighth grade was high school.
Yeah, I got out of high school, and who in the heck wants to go? You know, nobody really wants to go back after that, man. I wanted to chase legends and chase ghosts in the cemeteries and stuff like that.
But well, the funny thing was, I had gone to school. As you know, I went to a tech school during high school and after high school for broadcasting. Imagine that.
Well, yeah.
And I went to high school for theater.
That was money wasted.
and college for broadcasting, and then, or tech school for broadcasting. And then I was supposed to go to college for communications. And I was like, come on. I've already gone through 4 years of high school and a year of broadcasting school. And now you want me to go to college for another 2 to 4 years of college? No, I can't. And, you know, then my dad passed away. So it just... No, didn't work.
You said, come on, man. I've already been through 10 years of high school. And Todd!
How many times were you left back, Sean? How many years are there to go to school?
A couple of times. That's it. But hey, guys, welcome back. This is, of course, your Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. And, man, we've been off for a couple weeks, guys. We apologize for that. We had technical difficulties last week. You guys believe if you...
We had a family emergency the week before.
Family emergency.
Difficulties last week.
Technical difficulties. But we are back. We're sounding great, I think, guys. Let us know. Give us a thumbs up if you're in the chat room, guys. Let us know if we sound good and what's going on. Now, I guess there's... I heard, Nathan, that there's... some other shows out there now. I'm not sure the names... different shows, but I just realized this week how much of a box me and you have been in since we've started, because when we started this, or even now, we in no way, shape, or form care about, you know, anything. We give our best to all you guys out there doing this show, and we hope it is a great thing for you. But, you know, Nate, it reminded me that we do our own thing.
It's like I've said to you before, Sean. People say, you know, you do a show about ghost hunting? Mm-hmm. And I say, no, we do a show about our interests. And whatever our interest is that week, that's what we do a show about.
That's it. If it's, crotchless panties, then that's what we'll do the show on. And as a matter of fact...
Oh, we're doing a show about UFOs.
As a matter of fact... Anyway, man. Anyway. What did you do this... what did you do today, by the way? You had to work, right? I got weekends off.
I did have to work today, and I'll have you know, working on Sunday is never fun, but I do work in the entertainment field, so it's got its ups and downs. But I going into work on a Sunday.
Right. No,
and especially like I'm in Connecticut right now. We're having a minor heat wave here with, you know, the beginning of June.
Oh, hey, nice.
Every day's been in like the 90s. And of course today I go in. It's Sunday morning. The air conditioning's broken.
Oh.
And I've told Sean I have my office is a little booth behind another booth behind another office behind a lobby,
and
so no air gets back there. And I'm literally melting. I'm picking pieces of my melted flesh off the ground. I'm thinking I'm a zombie at that point.
Yes.
No, it's just the AC. And
why don't you just sit naked like you do at home?
You and I know what we like to do, what we like to get out there and do. This week I had fun hunting down a report of strange mists in the woods.
You did?
I did.
Let's see, a strange mist in the woods.
Yes, these people were reporting a strange mist moving through their woods.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this sounds like a job for the demon hunter. So I put on my cape and my...
Hey, go to my quiet place.
Wore my tidy whities on the outside.
Yes.
And went out. As a superhero that I am.
With the big demon hunter on the back.
Well, they say they have something on the back of the tidy whities. I don't know if it spells anything.
Brown streaks in the tidy whities. They're not regulation, folks.
That's a racing stripe.
Oh.
But I went out and I, you know, brought minimal equipment, as I usually do, an SLR camera, a couple recording devices, and to do some video photos and recording.
Yeah, I brought my fanny pack.
Sorry, you cut out on me there, man. Didn't get you.
Bring your fanny pack.
I don't have a fanny pack. I have an Uber pack.
Uber pack, okay.
I have an Uber pack.
I'm going to wear a fanny pack. I think, are we reaching that age yet, Nate?
I was afraid I was reaching that age, so I went out and bought... I went out and bought a bandolier like Chewbacca wears.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I did, and I fit everything in that, and that's why I called it the Uber pack.
Yeah, but Chewbacca, he wears those.
Science of you, please.
It's, ammo packs, right? Across his chest.
But that's what a bandolier is, but I bought, like, one that's made specifically to replace a fanny pack, so you wear it across your chest like Chewbacca.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. But so I go out to these woods to check out these haunted mists, and I set up in the back, and I swear I see him, but I can't. I'm taking pictures. Nothing is showing up on film.
Oh.
And
now, is this a big mist or was it a small mist?
It was like a wisp of
set
mist
the scene.
Flowing through the woods. Like I literally, when I first saw it, went, "Holy crap! What is that?"
Scotty,
I literally said the words,
right.
"Holy crap! What is that?" And we can turn that into a soundbite now.
Let's do it.
I go out and I go to the bottom of a hill.
Yeah.
And I just, nothing I can do. So finally I sat down there with my binoculars. Forget the camera, forget everything. I just want to see this, see if I can figure it out.
Right.
It was the weirdest, lightest color family of squirrels I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
What a bummer to a story. I'm at the very least, you'd think I'd get some like cryptozoology thing. No, they were just really light colored squirrels. And they were moving so quick through the trees
right.
that it looked like a mist.
Were they all laughing at you?
They were.
I bet they were.
I should have ate them. Squirrels are nuts.
Should have ate them. Did you kill them? Did you kill the gray squirrels?
I would never do that, Sean.
Well, you know, they say aliens, that they walk among us, folks. They say that you have, what, two types, grays and, what is it, blues? Grays and blues, or is that, that's
the lizard.
That's the Civil War.
You have these subterranean lizards that, they have their bases underground here on Earth, and have the grays, and then you have the Nordics.
Yeah.
So there's three, there's actually four races, I think, but I think there's only three left or something like that.
Three races left. See, the aliens are dying off. We don't even know they're here yet.
I think they're in. I think it's like war, and they just use us as a station, place to stop and refuel.
We're like a truck stop. The human race.
They power their ships on salt water. The little rockets you used to use when you were a kid that you'd fill them with water and pump them up with air and they'd shoot.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. Doop-a-whoop.
Travel through space.
So anyway, the moral of your story is your gray alien was a gray squirrel. Was it a flying squirrel at least?
No, it was a very disappointing squirrel.
Jesus. What are you guys smoking out there in this side of Connecticut where you think a gray squirrel's a myth?
I swear to you, man, I would have not believed this myself if I had not been out there and I saw this thing move across. I was like, hey, there's a mist out there. What is that? And
yeah. What was he, jumping tree to tree or something?
He was like running up and down. There were like these trees laying down on their sides and they were running up and down them. And it was just very confusing. And I guess I shouldn't go on ghost hunts or monster hunts or legend hunts when I'm taking too much NyQuil or something.
Don't smoke the bushes. Don't smoke the bushes. Demon Hunter!
Ghost Man!
Lest we forget tonight's guest.
Dun dun.
Tonight's guest! Ready? William Allen Barnes, guys, of the Falcon Project, huh? We go back on the hunt, on the trail for Bigfoot. We're gonna bring the legend out of the shadow of the campfire into the main stage, baby. We're going Bigfoot hunting tonight in an all-new way. Yeah, that's what's gonna happen, Nathan. Yeah, I gotta take that off because it's cutting you out, buddy. I don't know why that was cutting you out. We tested it before the show.
I don't know. I think you're doing something wrong on your end.
So. We tested it before. I'm sure I'm doing something wrong. Yes. Absolutely. So anyway, we got William Allen Barnes in the house. And William, thanks for coming on at such short notice.
Trehearne.
Yeah.
Every time you say his name, I just remember the...
The horns.
The... old John Wayne movie where he's Silverado. Like, what's your name again? William something Trehearne. And
I remember that one, yeah. I remember that. My dad used to watch that. Hey, I was going to tell you, you know, the thing about Bigfoot, and you know we dig Bigfoot, but we're kind of, we're always been open to everything. The ghost thing for a while, cryptoids, whatever. We just do it all. We're legendary thrill seekers, but
we have somebody on our show a while back who was trying to convince us that Bigfoot was actually a the reason that we're more and more sightings of him was aliens were trying to repopulate North America with the Gigantopithecus.
Yes. Woo! Samuel Adams, Boston Law. Hey, big shout out to the Indiana Pacers.
Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Wow, that drug on for a minute. But anyway, the Indiana Pacers pushed the Miami Heat to Game 7 back in Miami, Demon Hunter, on Monday. I know that doesn't thrill you, but it does here in the Hoosier State because... we're one game away from the big show, baby.
So. Now, are you like expecting that the day that the big show comes and you're all there in one place in the middle of the county or in the middle of the state, that's when the tornado is going to touch down and wipe you all out?
Yeah, that, I hope not. I hope not.
Oh, I mean, there's weird stuff going on, man. Three storm chasers got killed just Friday.
That's right, guys. And on a serious note, we want to send our hearts out to the victims of these tornadoes. These terrible. You talk about monsters and legendary things. These tornadoes this year have been legendary. And I tell you what, as a guy who survived two of them, brother, there's nothing so scary as a tornado coming right at you because you just can't run. You can't get out of the way, guys. So pay attention, for God's sakes. Watch the Weather Channel and get one of those storm bunkers. I've been actually thinking about it, you know?
It's funny. You remember how I told you how excited I was when I was down in... New Mexico. You had gone out to see the hometown of Billy the Kid or something like that, and I went out to Roswell.
Went to Rodoso. Not Rodoso. Lincoln.
Lincoln. You went to Lincoln, and I went to Roswell.
Yeah.
And while I was down in Roswell, New Mexico, I got stuck in a supercell.
Oh my god.
Touching down around me and stuff like that. And I was loving it. Loving it. But like other people were freaking out. But it never even occurred to me I'm gonna get sucked up in a tornado, and obviously it can happen.
Yeah, and I think the bad thing about that OKC thing was it was hit at rush hour, man. The only thing worse than that is people will sleep in their beds at night when it hits. So it's a devastating thing, man. And they're right there in Tornado Alley. I don't know how these – well, that's probably how the insurance company makes their money all the time. But every year it seems like the insurance company's rebuilding these homes, man.
I don't know. It's
Scotty, beat me up.
I couldn't do it. I mean, I literally – The closest, even with the supercell I was in New Mexico, the closest I've ever come to a tornado, I actually drove into a tornado.
Right.
I did not realize I was driving into a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
I was in an old 1978 Monte Carlo.
Oh, well, you'd have been okay anyway.
Yeah, it was like, well, it had glass T-tops.
Right.
That's the only way I knew I was in a tornado when it happened.
The Batmobile.
I pulled out of my backyard, and it had been sunny in my backyard. I pulled into my front yard, and it was raining.
Right.
I took a left turn, and all of a sudden, I saw this cloud coming at me, and suddenly it was like I was in the middle of, they dumped my car underwater.
And you was,
I was getting hit with no, not with that.
Your story's exciting somebody, Nate. That's terrible.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Don't call me Shirley. That's a good one. Airplane. I like that.
So we get out there and we, I'm sitting there in the car and I'm watching the water literally move alongside my car in stripes along the side. And I look up and there's just this pitch blackness above me. And the next thing I know, it just clears up like that. And I look behind me and there's a tornado.
Oh, man.
Like, I literally had driven into a tornado and don't know how I survived it in that car. It just must have all come together at just the right moment.
Now, was that the same root bucket that you drove when we went out to
No. Was the file cabinet was a Buick.
Yeah, the USS movable file cabinet. Yeah, mobile file cabinet. Literally, guys, this car, when I first met Nathan 6 years ago or whatever, we were out there at Gettysburg and we opened up the car door on this huge car that he drove. What was it, a Monte Carlo? What did you just say?
It was a Buick Park Avenue.
Buick Park Avenue. So you open the door and literally he had case files and socks and underwear. I think there was a dead hooker back there too. I don't know.
But she was just part of a case, so I couldn't throw her out in the street.
It just all spilled out onto the floor, man. Had my respect from the get-go. Yeah. But anyway, getting back to the tornado things, ADD here, guys, our hearts go out to them, though. So, seriously, pay attention to the storm things. This has been a bad year, and expect it in your neck of the woods, because you never know.
Yeah. You never know when it's going to hit, where it's going to hit, how it's going to hit. And for those people who lost their lives this week, like I said, those storm chasers, that just shocks me, because those are the guys who are out there. They're not out there for the thrill of it. They're out there trying to collect the science, and they died.
Well, and they're out there for the thrill of it, too. Come on, let's...
I don't know. I mean, it's thrilling to you and I.
You
and
have
I'm sure
to.
It's thrilling to them, but it's thrilling to them, not in an adrenaline rush.
Oh, I'm sure that's why they do it. Yeah, I differ with you. I mean, yeah, they're out there for science. So are we, with legends and ghosts and goblins and big feats and all that stuff. Yeah, we want to prove everything, but chances are the reason at some point that you got into it is because you like the thrill of it. It's human. It's human emotion.
But that would mean that you're human, Sean, and I have been.
I know. That's what kills me when people say, we're in it for the science. The rest of you are thrill seekers. So you don't get thrilled when you go out and look for these things? No. Well, if you're not getting something out of it, man, no thrill at all, then I suggest you step away from it. Huh? Yeah, that's what I think. I will fight anyone, sir. Fisticuff. Fisticuff.
Wrong, 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 wrong.
I can hear you clicking. This is Battle of the Clips now. Funny clips.
It's going to be the Battle of the Sound Clips. The new Ghost Van and Demon Hunter show. There will be no actual talking. It will be just Sean and I playing clips.
I'm ready for six.
That's my favorite right there. I'm ready for six.
I'm ready for six.
So you don't have any chains this weekend. Your wife has left the building. You are on your own.
No, she got home. She just came home as the show was starting.
Oh.
I was leaving for the studio, and she was pulling in, and that's about all she and I ever get to see each other anymore. We bump into each other as we're running to our own things that we have to do. So,
yeah. Do you run to do your own things? Ever?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen your house on that big driveway. I wouldn't suggest running up that thing.
Well, of course, right now in this heat, there's no real running involved.
It's, right. No. Well, I know on the... now, what's the smoking situation? You told me before that you're still in the Blue E cig. Have you broke vows? Have you...
No. Actually, I will admit, on Memorial Day, I had a cigar.
Yeah, but that's ceremonial. I mean...
Yeah. But I have had no cigarettes, no pipe, and that cigar was the only cigar I've smoked since I started the Blue E cig. Back in, what was it, June? We're in June now, March. Or April. April 21st, that weekend was when I started.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, well. Somebody said in the chat room the audio is jacked tonight. I don't hear it. I think your guys is... Ghost Chaser, I think your audio is jacked, brother. You better check them headphones, man.
Your audio is jacked?
He said the audio is jacked. It's jacked.
Is that good? I don't know what jack means.
Jack means messed up, bro. Messed up.
Are you sure it doesn't mean cool? Doesn't mean... Great.
That might be slang with the youngsters. I don't know. Ghost Chaser's not a youngster, though.
Those young people? Sure. Ghost Chaser's a youngin', right?
Those young kids. You know, I'm only 37. Gonna be 38 coming up in the big September, man. The big 3-8.
I have this image now as I'm getting older that I'm gonna be sitting there talking to people going, you know, back in the 70s.
Yeah. Well, I did say that. That's a funny thing because this week I was, some guy was asking me about our show and, you know, it's so cool. You guys had the TV show, whatever. Yeah. And I thought, you know, this guy looks my age, and we start having a conversation at work. And I said, well, you know, man, it's a passion of mine. Back in 1975 when I was born, a lot of people weren't. And he goes, what? And I said, yeah, 1975, and yeah, you remember the old shows that came on, they talk about Ghost and, you know, Mr. Boogity. Who remembers Mr. Boogity? Remember that? It was a Disney thing. I'm surprised you don't...
Mr. Boogity?
Yeah. Not funny.
I'm surprised you don't remember it. So it was Mr.
Boogity. Making it up.
No, he was a ghost, living with Mr. Boogity. Come on, guys. People in the chat room, back me up here. Living with Mr. Boogity, or... No, it was just called Mr. Boogity. It was a Disney thing, and... Before they were the One World Order or the New World Order. But he was asking me about it, and he's like, 70, are you kidding me? And I said, yeah, when were you born? And he said, 88 or something like that, man. And I just went crazy. I lost it because, you know, you think there for a while, 38's not that old, 40's middle aged area there. And wow, where has the time gone, brother? I guess we just keep burning up the airwaves until we get to wherever we're going, huh?
Well, it's going to happen eventually, Sean. You're going to wake up one day and see those gray hairs in your thinking beard there. And
yeah.
Funny queer.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
Yes, Sling Blade thanks that. Demon Hunter!
Uh-huh.
Want to do news?
Uh-huh.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the news. Always hot. Always exciting, always fresh. It is fresh, right? Yeah, it's new and it starts right.
Yeah. Oh.
Now.
You couldn't hear me over that, could you?
No, I could not. It wasn't cutting you out before. Remember when were doing
this? You turned up the volume.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. It's louder.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I guess we know now.
You sure your Skype didn't do it to you again? Since it's readjusting everything
Let's
for
do it
you
again.
Now.
Here. Now talk.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter, and I'm here to talk to you today about something very important.
VD.
Scabies is a horrible disease.
Venereal. Venereal disease. That was better. I turned it down.
Huh? Scabies is a horrible disease.
Who says that I'm not a...
Its main component that is spreading it. Its name is Sean Burris, and we are
Really? Dead air kills, man. Dead air kills.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to say next.
Well, you never know what I'm going to say. I'm a
Your technicality wrapped up in a enigma.
I'm a tech genius. I just
adjust. Well, let's see here, Sean.
I'm
the
still
New
talking.
York Post.
How rude.
The New York Post has announced that he had grave intentions. A Houston property owner tried to... Yeah. All right, folks, have a drink. Remember the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter drinking game means that every time Sean and I make a mistake reading the news, since we don't get to read it in advance, means that you get to take a drink. Don't play this game while you're driving and listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, or if you're going to be driving right afterwards. Or if you do play the game, wait at least an hour for every drink after to...
Always drink responsibly.
Yes, always drink responsibly.
Naked, so you don't slip on your pants going down the stairs.
Yes. And basically do it in a hot tub and... or
do it in a hot tub.
Full of jello.
Funny, funny, so weird.
Anyway, he had grave intentions. A Houston property owner...
Yeah.
Tired of homeless people using his land for a toilet.
No. Oh.
Created a fake cemetery in the space.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Hoping the indigent would show respect for the deceased.
Oh.
He even went to a stonecutter and got headstones rejected bearing the carved names of real live, make that dead, people.
Real live dead people?
Yes.
Oh.
So basically, he got tired of people walking into his woods and taking a poop. And so he created a cemetery, thinking that that would scare them off.
Are they like plastic Kmart tombstones, like for Halloween? Or?
No, he went to a real stonecutter.
What?
Got tombstones that had been rejected, like if they had put the wrong name on it, or if they'd misspelled something, or they carved something wrong.
Yeah.
Or it had a chip in it, and the people didn't want it.
Okay. So,
he basically just built himself a cemetery.
Well, how much freaking poop can you get? I mean,
apparently there was a lot of poop.
I guess. Whatever. So he's going to pay tens of thousands of dollars in monument making to people won't go poop. It's fertilizer. It's natural fertilizer. He should be thanking these people.
Well, you know, it's funny. For a while there, I had worked for a pet cemetery in the cremation department. And we'd make... we also ran a local pet graveyard. And people would buy spaces for the animals, and they'd get the stone sent to them, and they'd put the stone out on the cemetery. The thing is, a lot of people would rent the spaces for their pets rather than buy the spaces.
Okay.
And if you stop paying the rent, they dig up your pet and toss it into an incinerator.
You're kidding me.
No. And then they take the tombstone that you bought.
Wow.
And chuck it on a pile, and those tombstones are then used to make, like, pavement and things like that.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
No. So, folks, I'm giving you this hint. If you ever decide to bury your pet in a pet cemetery, buy the space. Don't rent it. Because eventually you will miss a payment.
Well, yeah.
I'm ready for sex.
You're gonna miss it. Well, I don't know. They got insurance now for the... Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, no, I've seen that.
Yeah, they get insurance, and you can pay up front or whatever. It's exciting. It's exciting. Was that it? Was that the story? We bought
that. That was the story. Hey, how about this? Who says there isn't life after death?
I don't know. A lot of people, actually. I've had lots of discussions.
An African man shocked his family and friends when he came back to life at his own funeral.
Oh.
This is from the New York Post. Oh, great. Get ready to drink, Post.
They do a lot of stuff out there like that. Africa.
Bringington Dama Zanith, 34, was in his coffin when mourners noticed that the dead man's legs started twitching.
What, they don't embalm over there or what?
I guess not.
Oh.
Zanith had been pronounced dead in his Zimbabwe home the day before his funeral.
That's fun to say.
So it's kind of like catalepsy, that whole thing that Edgar Allan Poe was so afraid of.
Zimbabwe.
Do you know that George Washington was a member of the Buried Alive Society?
And that was the cats that wanted the bell inside the, or up above
the
coffin.
Well, they didn't have the bell in George Washington's time, but what he did have was, it was in his will that his body had to be laid out for 3 days until people noticed whether or not it was decomposing, and they couldn't bury him.
Are you saying in George Washington's time they didn't have the technology to have bells? Is that what you're... They didn't have the bell.
Why are you being difficult?
I'm just saying, the Liberty Bell, things like that.
I'm just saying that they had the technology to make bells. They didn't actually make the dead ringer situation until the 1800s.
Oh.
That's where the term dead ringer comes from.
Dead ringer? Huh?
Yeah, because if somebody saw something, they would put you in your casket and you'd have the little bell. And if you were actually alive, you could ring the bell and they'd come and dig you up.
Yeah, but so, you'd have, what, 2 minutes of oxygen or 5 minutes probably?
Who knows? But they do know that the saying came from the fact that if you saw somebody who looked like somebody you knew who was dead, you'd say, that must be a dead ringer.
Yeah.
Somebody would ring the bell.
Ring the bell.
So you're a dead ringer for somebody. That's where the term comes from. But no, Sean, I'm not saying that George Washington and our founding fathers didn't have the technology to make a bell.
Well, I just need to clarify. A lot of people confused out there. So, guys, he's going to retract that statement because he did say that...
I'm not retracting anything.
Our founding fathers couldn't make a bell. Anyway, are you done?
I'm done.
Done. Here's the next story, guys, in the news. Hot and fresh. G&D, fresh off the press. Here's a good one. Monica Amstoy, drink up, guys, sues United Airlines over masturbating passenger.
How did I know you were going to pick that one?
It's my favorite.
I'm ready for sex.
Who'd you fly on this weekend?
I'm ready for sex.
Huh? So anyway,
I'm worried about who you flew over this weekend.
See, Monica is suing United Airlines, apparently, guys, over a masturbating passenger, which I'm sure he listens to the show, or she does. But it does say a California...
All masturbators listen to our show, Sean?
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. Just chronic cases. They probably are doing it right now, actually. That's all right, guys. Turn up the computer. Anyway, a California teenager is suing United Airlines after she said the company did nothing to prevent a fellow passenger from joining the Mile High Club with himself.
I'm ready for sex.
When the mood hits you, man, you got to go. Monica Amstoy, 18, claims that while flying from New York, if it was any younger than that, it'd be creepy. But she's 18. She's legal, guys. Claims that while flying from New York to Los Angeles last October, she noticed the man fueling his pocket rocket. He was fueling his pocket rocket, guys. The courthouse news reported Amstoy, who is represented by Gloria Alred. It's a woman representative. He's in trouble. Says she alerted a flight attendant who got the man to stop. But as soon as the attendant left, the perpetrator exposed his penis and started to masturbate again. That's dedication.
I'm ready for sex.
But as soon as the attendant left, I just want to say it again. The perpetrator exposed his penis and started to masturbate again. That's what Amstoy's...
Are you flying anywhere this weekend?
No, I was grounded. I stayed at home. I was on the ground. Amstoy said that in her statement. The flight crew allegedly... she also tells the KABC News she could not relocate because there was no other empty seats in her class. The flight crew allegedly took no further action to stop or relocate the man, even when Amstoy continued to complain. Amstoy's father reported the incident to police, and the in-flight masturbator, you've heard in-flight movies, we got in-flight masturbators now, guy, he pleaded guilty. United Airlines has released a statement saying the comfort and security of our customers is our top priority, and we will closely review this complaint when we receive it. The suit accuses United Airlines of negligence, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and false imprisonment. Oh, Jesus. Jesus. Huh? That's no money thing. She can't sue the guy. She's going to sue the airline.
You know, but the funny thing is, she's 18 years old. She's probably just out of high school. She telling me that she never sat behind some guy in class who was fueling his pocket rocket.
Was you a chronic masturbator? I mean, was that something you did in high school?
I wouldn't say that I was a chronic masturbator.
You wore it out.
I wasn't getting my pass out of the Army for it, you know.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Wasn't that what that guy in MASH did? What was his name? Clink or whatever?
No, it was Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, jerked off in the... Anyway! You want me to take the next one?
Oh, sure, why not? For sale in New York City. Fridge with a morbid history.
Oh, you stole my story.
I did. I knew you were going to go for this one. It's a fridge big enough for a family of four.
Okay.
New York's Office of General Services has turned to eBay in an attempt to sell off a huge steel morgue refrigerator now located at the Manhattan... My mic is in the way. Psychiatric Hospital.
Stop. Quit playing with your dinghy.
Bidding on Saturday afternoon was up to $475 for the four-drawer unit. But the price does not include delivery. Yeah. Buyers have to be willing to remove the fridge themselves from the Manhattan Psychiatric Center.
Yeah.
Office of the General Service spokeswoman, Heather Grawl, tells New York Post that this ad is no hoax.
Right.
She says that the agency does get usual surplus items to sell from time to time, including barber chairs from the prison and police cars, but does not recall the previous sale of any morgue coolers.
Yeah.
The auction runs through June 6th.
Be playing with yourself.
Are you gonna
bid? I was too busy reading.
Don't be playing with yourself. Don't be playing with yourself.
Huh? You're just mad because I stole your story.
Don't be playing with yourself.
Are you done? Are you gonna bid on the refrigerator?
Where would I put it?
I don't know.
I may live in a mansion in the woods, but I do not really have room for a morgue fridge.
Yeah. Well, you can get up early and put a bid on it and see. You might get that for like $20.
Yeah. I bet like the guys who build the haunted houses for like different places, they'll probably bid on it and bid enough to win it because they can use it on one of their attractions or something.
They'll bid it to win it. Okay, we got another one here, Demon Hunter. Are you done?
I guess.
You sure?
Yeah, why not?
I got to do this one more time, though.
Don't be playing with yourself.
I think he's talking to you, Sean.
Don't be playing with yourself.
That's a great one.
He's talking to you.
UFO appears to deliberately enter Mexico's Popocatapa volcano. Drink up, guys. Drink twice for that. Slam it down. Yeah, UFO guys out there in Mexico.
Tequila for that one.
You know, Mexico seems to have a lot of UFO stuff popping off now.
You know, I have to say, though, before you get into this story, Sean, the reports on this is a giant hotspot flying into a volcano.
A giant hotspot?
Yeah. Using a thermal camera, they caught this, right?
I don't know. We haven't read the story yet.
All right, read the story.
Okay. Here we go, guys. In the new video, a UFO seems to approach Mexico's Popocatapa volcano, then slows down, turns, and deliberately enters the smoldering volcano crater. The video recorded on May 30th at around 8:30 p.m. I wonder if that'd be Eastern Standard Mountain. I don't know. Is the latest in a series of alleged UFO events that have taken place near the central Mexico active volcano since late 2012. Demon Hunter.
Okay.
It's alleged a series of these taking place. What do you say? Are they all Hot Pockets flying into the...
They're all Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets.
Those are good. Mexico's media company, Televisa, monitors any daily activity around the volcano, which is about 40 miles south of Mexico City. Last November, video images showed what appeared to be a brightly lit cigar-shaped object plunging into the top of Popocatapa. Huh? It was protruding to the...
protruding? Have a drink, folks.
To the top. What I think is that this is not a likely fake. I think for the moment, this is a genuine image capture, he told the Huffington Post. The Joint Chief of Staff in Washington weighed in and said this. This is a low-light camera which allows the volcanologist. Shut up. Studying the footage to see any incandescent on the flank of the volcano in night shots. As such, any brighter lights that are captured will appear very bright, as the one planet star indicates. D'Antonio, D'Antonio, drink up, guys, points out that the camera created a time-lapse video of still shots put together. When played back at normal speed, normal speeds, the object is made to appear to be moving very fast, but in fact, it is moving at aircraft speeds if you play it at proper frame rate for the capture. While he admits the time-lapse effect prevents confirmation that the object had wingtip strobes, which would help prove the terrestrial aircraft argument. D'Antonio asserts that the flying object is turning at a rate consistent with aircraft, but the case that it is descending is not at all made. Huh?
Well, see, the thing that worried me about this, because the only reason I knew this is I've actually seen the video.
And D'Antonio's, the jury's still out, if the alien craft headed for the hot volcanic bath.
What I wanted to make sure was that these were playing in the right order. Because you see this bright hot thing fly through the air, and then land in the volcano.
Right.
How do we know that he didn't reverse the pictures and actually shot out of the volcano, got caught by the wind, and was pushed away?
Well, we can't. I don't think. Did that. But see, you can't prove it's not. See, you're one of those guys that says it's not. I say it could be.
See?
Your glass is half empty kind of guy.
Where was it there?
Huh? I was looking for my, I had it all queued up, too.
Surely you can't be serious.
Oh. I had it all, beam me up. I had it all queued up, but,
It's
anticlimactic now. I can't,
Don't start talking Star Trek with me, man. I just got done seeing that.
Yeah, how was that, anyway?
Oh, the Star Trek?
Yeah.
Fabulous. Anybody out there who's a huge Star Trek fan, if you were an original Star Trek fan and you're like, I don't know if I want to get into the new movies, I got to say, they did the first one well. Being a Trekkie myself, I'll go as far as saying I'm a Trekker.
Yeah.
Say goodnight, Popo.
Sean is a cross-Trekker, but I'm a Trekker.
Goodnight,
Popo. I will say they did a great job bringing a new version of Star Trek out with the old characters, with something that the fans who are big Trekkies don't have to argue with, because it fits right in with the actual Star Trek legends. And they've managed to take another traditional Star Trek story and turn it into another fabulous new version for us all to see. Definitely go out and see the new Star Trek movie. Into Darkness, that's what it's called.
And nice and supple.
Your hands are nice and supple.
Out of Pepe. Out of Pepe.
Anyway.
These all things that the inmates used to say to you, Sean, when you used to visit them in prison?
We're 1943.
One last story here. I won't read the whole thing. I just want to go into it really fast here.
A
Newcastle, Wyoming high school student who built a nuclear reactor was disqualified from the International Science and Engineering Fair this month for on a technicality. It seems
that
Conrad Farnsworth. Okay, right there. You know, Conrad Farnsworth, I expect him to be able to build a nuclear reactor, of Newcastle, had competed in too many science fairs.
Too many?
How can you compete in too many science fairs? Right. According to the Casper, it's really called the Casper Star Tribune. Okay. It was reported by the former director of the Wyoming State Fair, who later did not have her contract renewed. Oh, okay, so apparently whoever did this didn't renew the contract. Like I said, folks, I'm jumping through this story. I just find it fascinating that an 18-year-old built a nuclear reactor. Yeah. But the newspaper reports that Farnsworth is only one of 15 high school students in the world who have successfully built a fusion reactor. Farnsworth says the disqualification was silly.
Wow.
But
what happened to the days of carving a naked lady on your desk?
What happened to the days of building a volcano using baking soda and soda pop? And
well,
stuff.
Clearly you were on a higher educational level than I was.
But if this kid can build his own nuclear reactor, what I want to know is why we don't all have nuclear reactors in our homes powering our houses.
Yeah,
I don't count on. The local power companies.
Well, I heard that...
Houston, we have a problem.
Everybody is capable of free energy.
Houston, we have a problem.
But the government keeps it from us.
Well, Tesla was on the verge of building a system to give us all free energy, and that's why they put him out of business.
Put him out of business. And they bought his idea.
Contract, stole his patents, and put him out of business.
But, Sean,
it's about... What time is it, Sean? We have a new segment this week, don't we?
We're at 7:45, brother. U.S. time. We do have a new segment, guys. Very exciting about this one. Huh, Demon Hunter?
Yes. We normally at this time would give you your zombie update, zombie advisory report brought to you by Midnight Syndicate the Zombie Research Society. But since there has been no reports of zombies whatsoever in the last week, and following the CDC and NOAA and the local and international news radios, we have found nothing to tell us that there are any zombie reports. Your zombie standing is at null. There's no zombies out there, folks. You're safe for another week. But I did see that our friend from the...
Matt Moak?
Matt Moak from the Zombie Research Society is going to be doing some lectures with the libraries out there in California this week. So, Google Matt Moak, folks. Go check him out live in California.
You know, our good friend Matt, he's going to be one of those guys. He's real quiet, laid back. And all of a sudden, you're going to see him come out, and he'll be like the new George Clooney. There'll be a huge movie based on him. You know, it's going to come out in...
So thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to come out of nowhere. Oh, by the way, with that clip.
That was so thrilling.
Edith passed away this week, Demon.
I know, man. Yeah. That was sad. I grew up watching her. She always reminded me of my mom.
I did, too. And
don't try to be funny, will you, meathead?
Yeah, Archie Bunker. She was a good lady. Good actress. Anyway, guys, without further ado, many of you might know for years now. Many of you might know for years now, Nathan and I got together. Not only Ghost... But we went out and we looked for legends, and we put them to the test, guys. Because since we were kids, we always loved the legends, right? Bigfoot.
You love the legends.
Yeah, everything. Chewbacca. So each week, on the new segment of the G&D show, we're going to give you a new legend. So, without further ado, Ghostmen and Demon Hunters. Huh? Legend X, guys. Brand new segment. Tell them, Demon Hunter.
Legend X, where Sean and I go out and find the legends to tell you about them. We cross the country looking for the coolest, neatest, wonderfulest, bestest legends out there so that we can cross them off our list in Legend X.
Bestest. Holy crap, it's Bigfoot. Yeah, guys, Bigfoot, the Lizard Man, Mothman, they're out there somewhere. I believe it. Headless Horseman. Well, you said the Headless Horseman's not real, but I think it is. I think it's based on a true thing.
Sean.
Yeah. You just cut out.
Wrong, wrong, wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong.
Never been so right. No, but Legend X, guys. We chase these things down. Today's legend, this week's legend, is the Pudwudgies. Pudwudgies. Huh?
Pudwudgies.
Without further ado, Pudwudgies, guys. Here we go. Yes, creepy background music. You hear it?
I hear it.
Excited?
I'm a little excited.
A little, quit playing with yourself. Okay, here we go. Let's turn this down for don't cut you out a little bit. Might get real loud. The Pudwudgie, guys. You see, of course, I picked out the Pudwudgie L thing, but that's how they look, apparently. They are blue-robed, magical creatures, approximately 2 to 3 feet tall, and they live in the woods, and apparently, most commonly, in Indiana, the Hoosier State, my home, my love, and Massachusetts, Demon Hunter, out by you.
Well, where do they originally come from, Sean?
No one knows. But the Pottawatomie Indian, and I believe the Delaware, whoever the Indians were that, of course I didn't do my homework, whoever the Indians were that had the first Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims brought the story to the white man. And Comanchero.
So this is a similar Native American legend like that of the Rougarou?
It is, actually. It brought this legend in to the new settlers that came over from the old country, and they talked about the Pudwudgies, that's how you pronounce it, Pudwudgies, and they're little, like I said, 2 to 3 foot blue robe figures that are magical, and they feast on living humans and the souls of living humans. They're believed to capture and use to lure in other humans so they can eat them. So, yeah, and they're known for pushing people off cliffs here in Indiana at several parks. We got one called Shades of Death State Park. Of course, they call it Shades National Forest. But, yeah, there's some...
I grew up in Jersey where we actually have it. It's Shades of Death Road, and it's actually called Shades of Death Road.
Yeah. But greetings from Indiana and Massachusetts. They've been seen there for a long, long time. And the Native Americans, even... This is an interesting fact, Demon Hunter. Even when they modernized the Indians, they brought them, you know, modern-day religion, Christianity, all this stuff. One of the legends, well, several of them, but this one of the legends that they held true to and they swore to was the Pukwudgies.
Mm.
And they said these animals, these beasts, would steal infants in the night. And, yeah, they would lure in humans by... they would capture the souls of the people that they had killed in the past. And apparently they'd put the souls out there like mermaids or something, you know, kind of to attract the live members in. Oh, look, that's grandma over there. And then they would eat you.
Did they hang them in the air in the clouds like a giant UFO kangaroo?
No, I don't think they did that. I don't think they did that. I wonder if there was ever a pilgrim attack. But there is. I wonder if there was any pilgrims ever attacked. That's not in the history books.
Okay.
You think there was?
I don't know. I haven't seen one.
Well, have you ever heard of the Pukwudgies?
I've heard of the Pukwudgies, Sean, but only because I actually study, fables and things like that. I don't know much about them.
Well, I know.
Tell me more.
I know you have, because we've researched legends over the years, and these are ones we're going to have to get back on the trail of, man.
We are. We're going to have to, how would one go about catching a Pukwudgie, Sean?
I don't know. What do you think we should,
But you said they go after children, right? They steal children in the night. You have a child, don't you, Sean?
Yeah. Yeah, I have three children, actually.
Use a child as bait.
Yeah. I have three
your
children.
Wife wouldn't, your wife wouldn't mind if we,
took the kid and put a leash on him.
Get out and, put it in, one of those jumpers that you hang out in the yard, and we take her out in the woods and just hang her there.
Well, I would say first how we would research these little suckers, is go out to one of these wooded areas, which would be in Indiana or Massachusetts. Massachusetts is more known for these creatures than Indiana, even. And we would go out there to these locations, and there's actually eyewitnesses that have stumbled upon whole Pukwudgie villages. Yeah, so we would look for the remnants of some of these villages.
Now, is that like the gnome villages they find and the fairy villages they find that are holes in the ground?
I'm not sure. We have to get a witness on. I'm going to try to get one on the show before we pack up and head out there. But definitely food. You would think these guys eat more than human flesh and bone, you know. Maybe a ham sandwich. I don't know. Everybody likes ham.
You'd have to think that, but maybe they can go a long time without eating, Sean.
Jell-O. There's always room for Jell-O.
They all right, so the first thing we're using is Jell-O.
Jell-O on a plate with a string tied to it, or a fishing lure.
A cardboard box with the ruler underneath it and a string, and we can yank it out when they get in there.
No, but I think it'd be interesting, because, you know, a lot of these Native American legends, lore, if you want to go that way, a lot of these legends are older than time itself, and, not time itself, but they're pretty old.
Not older than time itself.
It could have been. It could have been. These could have been legends in the cosmos. How do you ever know? How would you know that? But, and these could be alien beings that are here. But, you know, we dismiss all these things, you know. It's funny because it's the same thing with Christianity. You know, people believe in God and stuff like that, and that's terrific. But then a lot of them, you start bringing up ghosts, and they go, oh, no way. And as we all know, Bible's one of the oldest documented occurrences of ghostly sightings, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
But people choose not to believe in that. So when you stumble upon these Pukwudgie things and, you know, fairy things, even I have been, you know, accused of, or I on occasion have said, fairies, you know, here we go, fairies, because you've seen so many doctored pictures and stuff like that. But who's to say that these lesser known legends, there isn't something to him, because I forget who it was. Was it Sagan, Carl Sagan, that said, you know, there's usually some sort of truth to these legends.
Mm. Huh? So the Pukwudgie, based on the Native American, that I'm going to go and try and say this. You don't have to drink for this one, folks.
Pukwudgie.
Wampagog.
Yeah, that's the one. I went with Delaware. Potawatomi and Wampagog, or whatever. Drink up, guys. I'm going to make them drink. Drink! The Wampagog was a channel or extension of the Potawatomi Indians that were big here in Indiana. That's why the Potawatomi brought the Pubwudgie legend here in Massachusetts, was the Wattapotami or whatever.
The Wattapotamia?
Wattapotamia.
Wattapotamia.
Yeah. So what do you think? How would you go about looking for these things?
Let's see. Well, like you said, we'd have to talk to somebody first who knew the history. Then we'd have to get somebody who knew the, like, beyond the history, we just want the legend.
Yeah.
How it started, what people believe. Then we'd have to talk to somebody from one of these tribes.
Right.
We'd have to go out and talk to the tribes about the Pugwudgie.
Yeah, and I wonder, you're out that way. Is there still Wattapotami, Wattapogany? I mean, we got to learn how to pronounce that before we go to the Indian tribe. We'll be
kicked. Because we say it wrong, we're liable to get our butts kicked.
Right, right.
I don't want to leave there with a tomahawk up my tush.
I don't either. But, you know, we go out there, we'd interview the Native Americans, and I'm sure we would get some elders that would tell us all about these things, and then we would go out to the location where they've been seen and camp out.
Yeah, well, although the native speaking Wap Anki,
you just said Wap. That's racist. You can't do that.
Those who spoke, the native speakers, died 100 years ago. Since 1993, the tribe has been working on the language, so they're still here. They're still here because they're trying to bring the old language back.
What, the Pubwudgies?
No, not the Pubwudgies. The You're going to make me say it again. Oh, look, it's phonetic. Oh, geez, that's not... That's practically Latin there. The Wampanegi. The Wampanegi.
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 Wampanegi. Yeah, which was a chapter of the Potawatomi. Demon Hunter, we're at 7:57, and we have a guest coming on at 8 p.m.
Woohoo!
William Allen Barnes of the Falcon Project, brother. What do you
say? Legend hunter.
Yeah, another legend hunter, but he's going to do it. He's actually getting money with this Falcon Project, and he's trying to put together the first ever aerial photography, and I think sound, too, investigation of a Bigfoot, something that would be out there constant looking for this beast, and not the beast, the legend.
Well, so, you know, people are always saying, why don't they just go out there with a bunch of infrared cameras and catch it? Well, because it costs money, folks.
It costs money. What do you say we take a break, Demon Hunter, when we get back? William Allen Barnes, guys, of the Falcon Project. We're going to bring Bigfoot to the main stage tonight on your D&D show. What do you think, Nathan?
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw! Guys, we'll be right back after these messages.
Searching. Hey, it's Don Laubin from Mysteries of the Museum on Travel Channel, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
That's right, guys. Welcome back, listeners around the world. This is the Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Welcome back to studio. And thanks to Don Wildman from Mysteries of the Museum. Yeah, baby. Don Wildman.
Yes.
Yes, Don Wildman. I'm long-winded, huh? I got that going on for me.
You're a bit long-winded. I got to keep cutting you off there.
I know. Well, I went to the second song. I was trying to, I forgot, I was trying to get you on the text and see if we had tonight's guest on. Do we?
We do. He's here. He's waiting. He's ready. He's on the job as we speak.
Oh, wow. We got him in studio, guys. And we waited all night for this real live Bigfoot hunter and the CEO and founder of the Falcon Project, William Allen Barnes, guys. William, what's going on, brother?
Not much. Just another day.
Another day in paradise, huh?
Kind of, yeah.
So you're out... Are you doing your actual job, or is this your actual job, looking for Sasquatch, the big guy?
No, I'm just working. Just regular job.
Regular job. All right. Well, hey, I tell you, thanks for coming on with such short notice. And it's really interesting what you got going on, William, because, you know, Nathan and I, we're kind of legend hunters. We always have been. We roam around. But nothing like what you got going on right now, brother. I mean, this is going to be a huge undertaking. The Falcon Project. I guess let's back up and let's start out with a young William. Have you always been interested in Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the Yeti?
No, I wasn't, actually. I was actually a gold miner.
Gold miner? I like you. Let's go get a beer. You get any gold chunks out there? Gold nuggets?
I used to dredge in the rivers up in Northern California.
Oh, wow.
Seven, I had an encounter, a very close one. Got to see it for like a minute and a half. Got it. Probably 3 feet away from it, as close as I got to it.
Oh, wow. So when you were out there panning for gold?
That's how I got into this.
Well, tell us all about it. What was that like? Was it a sunny day, overcast? And tell us the whole story.
It was actually nighttime. Got to see it walk all the way down the canyon. And actually, it came out of the side of the canyon and... rocks moving, it woke me up, and I was looking up the canyon where the noise is coming from. It was like an amphitheater canyon.
Right.
And I came around the corner, thought it was a bear, and then when I got about 30 feet from the car, I noticed it was a little bit too tall to be a bear. But I realized what it was right about then, and it walked all the way up to the tent and just stood there, and I was staring right at it. Time kind of stopped. My heart was beating so hard I could hear it in my ears.
Jesus.
It was quite interesting. If it happened to me right now and never did before, I'd probably have a heart attack. But
right. So, yeah, I mean...
It was kind of scary at first, and after it was all over with, and I watched it walk up the hill so gracefully, it was unbelievable.
So
and
it just...
about 45 minutes passed, and a calm feeling came over me, and just realized it was all it was curiosity. And the next morning, I moved my camp to the other side of the canyon, sold my dredge at the end of the month, and I didn't go back in that canyon for a couple of years, 2 years, as a matter of fact. Yeah, it was quite interesting. So I spent about 12 and a half years studying researchers why they can't film these in the wild. And this is what the Falcon Project came about, 3.5 years now. And... without the dual airship, it never worked. You know, the guy in Canada,
sure,
that's making it, Steve Barkley. It's a first of its kind, never built before. It's quite unique. It's like a camera ram, has a filming platform underneath. I'm sure you've seen the pictures.
Oh yeah, I got them up right now. Our listeners and our viewers are seeing it right now for the first time. We've got a picture of you. Got a picture of a Bigfoot sighting. Now I got a picture of. It looks like some of your staff tracking. Maybe in the back of a van or something like that.
No, that's not me.
Oh, that's not you. Well, we did. We got some pictures off the site, but I do have a picture of the Falcon Project. And what's the title for this craft? What's the name of it?
It's
the Falcon Project. Well, that's it. You know what? This is groundbreaking, though, Demon Hunter, because William got together with these cats, and it was your idea, right, William?
Yeah, I realized that we had to have something that could move slowly, and helium was the only thing that moved slow, and a regular airship would have worked. It would have never made it this far, and the guy in Canada contacted me about 3 months into my project, 4 months into it. He said, you need to look at something I've been working on for years. And actually, it was made for the filming industry to film stunts from the air.
Right.
And that's when we really took off the dual airship, because this is custom made for the project. It's the first of its kind.
You know what, Will? If
it does, the military has it, and they're not talking. Custom made.
Oh, yeah. You know, as soon as you launch this baby,
it's custom made, and we're talking $310,000 that we have to raise.
$310,000.
$310,000. And that's a basement bargain price, actually, because I've been through probably 20 helium airship companies, and I've been quoted as high as $1.2 million, $1.3 million. And camera systems, $250,000. Ours is costing $60,000 custom made. We're getting a good deal on it.
Now that's the gyro, right?
Huh?
That's the gyro?
No, that's the camera lens itself.
Oh, the lens is $60,000.
16 pounds it weighs.
Oh.
Hey, William, are you going to be able to control this thing from like a remote control, or is this going to be a manned craft, or?
Remote control, everything. Camera has a motorized lens. I have telescopic when I need it. And everything's remote control. Everything's done from the ground.
Nice. And this is going to be able to span how many miles over a course of a week or whatever?
Well, we got a 5-mile zone. So from point A to point B to point C is 10-mile circle.
Okay, so they could cover this thing constantly, pretty much.
Yeah, we can cover about 20, 25 square miles a night. We're doing saturation is what we're doing. And and 10 fly nights, we can fly 200 to 250 square miles. We know where some of them are within 200 square miles. California, Oregon, Washington, even up here, believe it or not, in Utah, those places. But doing saturation, we can actually cover in a year's time thousands and thousands of square miles. A lot of people don't understand what we're doing, and what we're doing is just that. It's a mathematical equation.
Sure.
We can cover more land than all the researchers and all the trail cams put together, plus more. So, you know, we'll be going from California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, northern Utah, Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, northern Florida, Virginia. We'll be all through across the states. In the wintertime, we'll be out east, and in the summertime, we'll be out west.
Now, this airship also has the capability, of course, it's an airship. It flies much more silent than if you had been using something like a helicopter.
Yeah, we have no propellers on it. It's air propulsion.
So you have that benefit too, that you're not going to be scaring anything away from the natural world.
Well, I don't think we have to really worry about that, because planes have been going over these mountains for over 100 years. These creatures have no predators. Except, you know, you bring a helicopter, and of course I'd run too. The reason for the camera we want and have them built is because we can see things a mile away pretty clear. It's gray, black, and white. It's not green thermal imaging, and it's high definition. And the gentleman that built the cameras actually made cameras for the shuttle.
Oh, nice.
Out of Texas. And it's a top-of-the-line camera. It's not even known it exists yet until we get it. We'll have the first one.
So the reduction in the NASA project is what's made it possible for you to get a good deal on these lenses now, huh?
Well, no. There was a lot of phone calls, about 2 years of calling companies. All across the world.
Yeah, when you're on a budget like we are, William, you get real crafty on how many phone calls you can make.
Budget. We have to have, you know, pay what you get for. You get what you pay for.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't buy the right stuff, it's not going to work.
Yeah. Now, you know, one thing, like, about the UFOs, I've been looking at UFOs for years, looking at Sasquatch. We don't know as much as you, of course, and we haven't been in the field. I've never had an encounter that I know of. Now, I have heard things out in the woods here in Indiana late at night, but who knows, right? So,
Now, Sean, just to throw in there, my best friend and I do believe that we ran into Old Red Eye, which is the New Jersey version of Sasquatch.
Oh.
So we thought we were chased through the woods there.
Yeah, it's called the New Jersey Devil.
Well, no, there's also Old Red Eye, who is a... is more of the Sasquatch legend than the Jersey Devil.
Yeah, well, it's the same. There's a lot of names for that area. In fact, back in the 17th century when we came over here or whenever there was an article or one of the colonists, people got killed by one of these creatures and they hunted it down and shot it. And this was way back in the early days and killed it. And it was kind of a strange story. You know, back then they wouldn't write things like that unless they actually seen it.
Oh, yeah.
It was on the East Coast in Virginia or someplace in the area. It was a story from the colony days. I wasn't there. You know, I can't tell if it's true or not, but the way they wrote it, it was a large, hairy, like person. I thought it actually walked on 2 feet.
Now, I got to say, William, I grew up in a haunted home, and I've experienced voices more than anything. Right out in the open, disembodied voices, a little girl calling for her mommy. Me and Nate was together, and we heard that. Separate things. Seeing things out of the corner of our eyes and stuff. But the feeling that you get in your stomach and in your chest when you see something like this, and you come face to face with a legend, Bigfoot, ghost, Yeti, whatever you call you, whatever have you, what's the feeling when you came that close to Sasquatch? I know you were talking about fear, but inside, it's kind of a fight or flight deal?
No. It was, I had nowhere to go. A tent is called false security.
Oh, yeah.
It was so close I could reach to the tent and touch it.
Mm.
That's how close it was. And I don't even know how long it stood there. Time kind of stopped. And then it turned sideways. I realized right then how big it was. It was very thick. It went from about 350 pounds to about 450 to 500 pounds. It was about a third wider than I was, but twice as thick, almost three times as thick as I am, about 6'4", 6'7".
Wow.
And I got a perfect side view of it. And when I seen that, it just blew me away. I mean, totally blew me away.
Did you get any facial features on the...
Stepped side of the hill, and it was so graceful. It was unbelievable. I mean, a human could never do that.
Now, the Native Americans believe, of course, the Yeti, Sasquatch, big guy, Bigfoot. They believe it's a magical creature.
Here's the problem with it. I'm half Cherokee myself, and I studied the Indian folklore of these creatures. And you got to understand that Indians were into nature and spiritual nature.
Sure.
When they walked up on one of these creatures, were on all fours, would stand up and walk away. So it turned into a human, they thought. And then sometimes when they walk up on one and it's standing up, it'd run off on all fours, so it turned into an animal. So right. You got to understand that they thought it was spiritual because it could morph itself into a human or an animal.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the Indians are always right. You just have to understand how they used to... hang on just a second. You have to understand that Indians look at things differently.
Sure,
they talk something's going
they're
on there.
Into nature spiritually.
Yeah.
And they're always right about these creatures, but they said it in a different way because it was spiritual to them, because they could do things that other animals cannot do.
William, are you okay? It sounded like Bigfoot attacked your car.
We were just asking if you were okay there, William. It sounded like something attacked your car or something while you were out.
Oh, no, it was just a motorcycle coming by.
I was like, he's getting rolled right now, man. Hey, I tell you what, William, you hear about a lot of these cover-up stories and things like that. The government don't want you to know a lot of things, blah, 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 blah. Do you think once you come out with this vehicle, because there's a...
it's not really true because we're trying to work with the forestry and fishing game. I've been contacting for 2 years the Forestry and
Sure. But I'm talking about at the highest level, men in black type stuff.
We want to work side by side with them. We don't want to... it's better to work with them than to not tell them things. We want to share information with them and educate them, educate the federal government, forestry and fish and game of these creatures too, just as what we want to do with the public. So this way we can have them protected. They don't need to save the land for them, that's for sure.
Sure. Well, don't you think as soon as you find this evidence?
Well, all this time on their own, we just need to have them protected so people don't shoot them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's going to be some idiot out there to pop a couple rounds off. But
it is, if you try to fight the government to shut the land down, that'd be the stupidest thing in the world to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So we just want to protect them, not take the land away from the public.
Sure. Now, don't you think if you come out with some groundbreaking evidence, which I'm sure you will, don't you think that the government might step in there and say, hey, give that over and we'll let you know what you can release?
No.
No?
I'm working through the university.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what you recently did some stuff, too, with America's Book of Secrets.
Yes.
And you put a lot of your information out there. You put it out there and for people to see, and you got a good reaction. How has that been helping with, like, the funding of the Falcon Project?
I won't know till Monday.
We caught you right in between, huh? That fresh.
Yeah, Monday I can probably tell you more. But I've had some really good results from it already. So I've already had calls today, yesterday. My number's on my website, my address, my email, everything. I get calls all the time, but it's getting more promising. You know, funding's hard. It's one of the hardest sales you can do in this field is get equipment. You know, people say, what are you going to do with money flying Lear jets and everything? One thing people don't understand is that we're all volunteers. We only get our expenses paid out in the field, and that's it. That's food, water, pack cigarettes every once in a while, whatever. Nothing else. We just get our expenses paid. We're volunteers. Under FAA rules, through a university or government institution, is that you have to be volunteers, you can't be paid,
right.
And we're underneath the development and research.
Okay.
Until we get our VIN numbers on the side of the airship, and then we're under research and something else.
That's okay. you don't have to have it all for us.
FAA is really strict on what we're doing, so I have to work with them, and it took me over 2 years just to get my foot in the door with the FAA to get it right.
Yeah, that was one of the things.
You can't fly a drone over 400 feet. As a government institution, I can go up to 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 feet, and you have to file for a COA in the beginning. And that's a general area that you're flying, and AOK, and you can fly that area.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the flight pattern that you'll have to follow with this. I mean, you're saying how you can travel all these places, but are you going to have to stay within a flight pattern for the FAA?
Yeah, we have to stay in certain areas according to FAA rules. You know, it's not, you just can't go out there and fly. You have to do it by their rules, but I can do it through the government institution since the university is a government institution. And as a civilian, everybody told me in the beginning I'd never be able to do this, and I knew I couldn't. And I said I could. One way or another, I'm going to do it. So I found a way to do it through the FAA.
Right.
And I hooked up with Dr. Jeff Meldrum at the university, and the university signed off on it within a week and said, you got to raise your own money, we'll do it. So that's how I was able to get to the high altitude. And you have to. You know, you can't do it 400 feet. You're doing that. If you can't go over 400 feet, it's useless.
Right, absolutely. So I guess the one thing I got to say is once you do get these back, what are you looking for? Of course, you're looking for the images, but is there other stuff? I mean, can you get a track from up above that high with this telescopic lens and stuff like that? Can you see, look, the brushes down here?
Well, actually you can at nighttime if it's fresh because there's a disturbance. There's cameras out there they use in Afghanistan and Iraq that you can go up, fly at nighttime. You can see fresh tracks. And the reason why is disturbance of the ground, and it's a special camera. And yes, we can do that. Even with the thermal imaging we're using, if it's fresh enough within a certain amount of time, I don't know exact time, yes, you can actually see the impression where the creature walked if you catch it early enough. You know, not the day before, but that night.
Gotcha. So how soon do you think you'll start getting stuff with this? I mean, you are pretty sure that this is going to make results.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I'm not even worried about it. Once we get in there, I guarantee in the first year we'll have so much footage. Once we get on top of one, we'll stay on it every night. And I got up to a six-hour fly time.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's, if I run out of fuel, I'll just fly back in and get more fuel and go right back out.
Now, if this thing goes down, we're in a world of hurt here, right?
Huh?
Now, if this craft that you're going to make, the Falcon Project, if it goes down and hits the ground, we're in a world of hurt, right? Because we're out some money.
No, it won't crash. You don't understand helium. Even if it gets a leak, it's just going to float to the ground.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't understand helium. I've seen balloons after a while. They come floating down soft. I guess you're right.
Yeah, it's helium. You know, even if you shoot a bullet through, it's just going to float to the ground. It ain't going to crash. It won't crash.
Right. Well, that's awesome then. And
the thing is, if we lose contact with the airship, we have GPS homing pigeon. So okay. What happens is, once we lose contact, it comes back where it came from.
Now, are we talking fiberglass or metal? The casing.
You what now?
Are we talking fiberglass or metal casing on this craft?
Oh, no. Carbon fiber.
Carbon fiber. Gotcha. I'm writing all this stuff down, William.
A carbon fiber tracking device, Sean. It's like the one you have around your ankle.
Yeah. Yeah, from the penitentiary. That's true.
Made out of carbon fiber where the engine sets that collects that air propulsion is.
Right.
It's lightweight. And we have a heavy payload. Believe me, we got a very heavy payload.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to go up to 10,000 feet, 9,500, 10,000 feet, because you got to remember, helium is measured from sea level. So if we're at the 3,000 feet, that means we can only go 7,000 feet high, and that's it. And if we're at the 5,000 feet, we can only go 5,000 feet above ground. And always on the airship, when you say 10,000, that's from sea level. So right. We're working around 3,000 to 5,000 feet up in the mountain, and we can go up anywhere from 7 more to 5,000 more. I mean, 5,000 to 7,000 more, depends how high we need to go up in the mountains, up in the canyons. We can go places nobody can get into.
Right.
Fly into these big canyons and look right down in between the trees. And also, we'll follow rivers, lakes, everywhere. Open areas. You know, if you read sightings, you'll notice there's a lot of sightings out in open areas.
Right.
And, you know, you got these researches, oh, this won't work. You know what? You know, and somebody even said, I'm not going to mention the name. I'm sure everybody knows it. Oh, I've done this before. Well, he's never done this before because the technology has never been used before. The guy's an idiot.
Yeah.
Say his name. But,
is this a well-known Bigfoot hunter?
We have a lot of friends like that who have tendency to say things when we do it and go, oh, I've done that before. We're like, how? It just came by.
Well, the thing of it is, he's never done anything like this before. It was back in the 70s when they used a single airship with a small camera on it. And he said it was only made for Caulfields. Well, you know what? I'm past Caulfields. I'm up there with the planes. And that's the reason we need such a big lens and telescopic lens, because a mile away I can tell if you're a human or a bear or whatever. I mean, I can tell what you are.
Now here's the thing, too. People are always saying, you know, well, if they're going to hunt down Bigfoot, why don't they just go out there with some thermal and night vision cameras and fly around until they find something? And it's because it costs money.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, the airplanes are too fast. We can hover, we can stop, I can spin it on a dime, I can stay on top of it all night.
Right.
Reason helium, lighter than air, airship is the best way to go. Because in an airplane, when they count gears for the fishing game, they do a circle. When you do a circle, you can't stay on top of it.
Right.
See, we can stay on top of it and follow it wherever it goes. We won't. It can run. It doesn't matter where it goes. We can stay right on top of it.
Gotcha.
It's a totally different world than airplanes. I mean, that's another thing people don't understand is about airships. Airships are very useful in research, very useful.
Now,
the military has been using more airships, more than what we know, that the public knows. They're being made every day, sent out to war zones. And they just started using them the last couple of years, really heavy, because they're real handy. You can't shoot them down. You just float to the ground, patch it up, and send it back up. You know, they're very durable.
Yeah.
And wow. It's made for what we're doing is made for our research program.
Now I've got one of those train of thought things happening here that sometimes I go off the rails, but I'm gonna try and keep it straight here for this. Now Sean and I for years have been working with every kind of paranormal group out there, trying to find discoveries of new kinds. And every time and one of our rules have always been we never tell people the wrong because you never know who's gonna find what. But every time we like strike on something new or different, the crowd breaks into like three groups. One, the group that thinks that what we're doing is exciting wants to join us. Two, the group that is mad that we come up with something before they did and they want to knock it down.
Haters.
And three, the group that wants to step us off in the background and watch and see what we find and then try and jump in later.
Scouts.
How has this been happening now that you've got this new technology and this new thing, and you've been working on it, and it's about to happen? Are you starting to get people who are interested in the field and saying that they want to be a part of it too with you?
I got more volunteers on the ground than anybody.
Yeah,
and I got over 50 people across the country I can collect information from when we go to state to state. That sighting. Fresh sighting, tracks, whatever. I'm probably over 50 people now. And when they call me, this is what I ask for, is information when I get into that state, if you want to help out. My crew is very small. We only got 4 people on my whole crew, and that's all we need. And the volunteer side is information. Information is very important, especially fresh information. And like there was a sighting 100 miles away, we can pack up. I mean, a good sighting, a legit sighting. We can pack up and be there in 2 hours, and we can put this thing in air in probably 45 minutes to an hour, and saturate the area for a week if we have to find where this creature went.
Now you're focusing on the area you're in right now, though, correct? It's your first.
We got picked areas already. When we go out, hot areas, hot spots. I've got an area that nobody even researches. These creatures have been there forever. And people don't research area, place up in Northern California. It's rough country. It's from gold mining, where I've got all these information. I found my first track up there, fresh track. It was only probably 6 hours old, 7 hours old, half a mile away from my camp. This area is very, very, very hot area. It's very active year-round, and it's in about the 4,000-foot level, and that's one of the places we're going to hit first, and then Oregon, then Washington, and then Idaho, southern Idaho and northern Utah, and then we're going to head out east, hopefully.
I was going to ask, if this works out, and you're catching what you're looking for right off the bat, you know, because you've got a lot of ideas here that are set in patterns and things like that. If it works out, how long do you think people are contacting you from all over the country saying, you know, we've got a site here, we need you in Rhode Island, we need you in Maine, we need you in...
Maine, it ain't going to happen.
Unless they put out some money.
It don't matter, it ain't going to happen.
Well, there you go. I tell you what, guys, we're getting up on the... Actually, we're over the half-hour mark. Any last questions, Demon Hunter, for William?
Just two I want to throw out there for William, because people obviously are interested in your project. How do they get in contact with you to help out and things like that? And where can they find the work you're doing?
Well, I'll just go to the FalconProject.com website. We appreciate all money that goes to the university. There's an address and email address for the university. And an address to send any donations they want to send to help out. I'm happy to have volunteers on the ground to give us information. Also, Derek Randall's crew from the Olympic Project is our quick response team for the next day. Once we get on top of one of these creatures, he comes in with his crew the next day, collects. We put him back in the same spot and film them in the same spot we filmed the creature that night, and they collect footprints, castings, hair samples, scat, whatever we can collect as evidence, and we don't touch it. My group don't touch that. It goes straight to all evidence goes to the university, so does the footage. My panel is some of the top people in the world, and they go over what we collect, and from there, it's up to them to give it to the public. And we are not going to show anything until they see it first and okay it.
Well, William,
we have a system that I don't touch nothing. The quick response team, we don't, it doesn't go through a bunch of hands, let me put it that way. It goes straight to the university. And then they scrutinize what we do, and then it goes to the public. And when it goes to the public, it'd be the real deal. It's not going to be no blob squatch or anything like that. It's going to be, you're going to see clear images.
There you go, William. I tell you what, brother.
And also we're introducing infrasound to track these creatures down.
Nice.
Another thing we're employing, because these creatures communicate when they're foraging at nighttime, and they don't use loud noises. They use infrasound. We're a firm believer in that. So we're going to collect infrasound out there while we're out there, and once we hit a hot infrasound, we're going to use it across the country because they're territorial. So if we use infrasound in Oregon and take it to Washington, and one of these creatures around and they're territorial, they're going to answer back.
Now, so, William, I'm one of these, the 30% of the human population that's sensitive to infrasound. So do you mean that if I'm out in the woods and Bigfoot's nearby, I'm going to start feeling sick to my stomach?
Well, I don't believe in sick in your stomach. I believe the subconscious hears the infrasound and the hair raises on the back of your neck. The sick thing, I've heard it over a few times, and I'm not really a believer in that because I've been close to these creatures a few times without seeing them. Since my first encounter, I've been close to them, close enough to smell one, and close enough to hear one going through the woods. I mean, really, like a Mack truck. But the infrasound, you got to understand, these things, the greatest camouflage, hide-and-seek animals there is. And what a better way to communicate through the forest is infrasound. And if you notice on sightings, if you read them, a lot of them will say, I didn't hear no birds, no crickets, no frogs, no nothing, because they can hear infrasound, and these are carnivores, they eat anything. So, of course, they're going to be quiet, because if they don't, they'll get caught and ate, whatever. So infrasound is very important in this field, and I've been pushing it for about 5 years now. So we're going to develop a system to use infrasound every new area we go in, throw the infrasound out, and hopefully we get a response back. And when we get a response back, we'll saturate that area. Infrasound is non-directional. That's the only problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot pinpoint infrasound most of the time.
And if they're communicating by it, you won't know what they're saying.
Unless you're in Fox Canyon or something.
Right. Well, William, I got to tell you, I thank you, sir, for coming on the show tonight, and I wish you all the luck in the world. Could you stay on the line one more second?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, guys, that's going to be another show down in the books, okay? You ready for this, Demon Hunter?
I'm always ready for it.
You're always ready for this. Okay, guys. From the shadow of the campfire, Bigfoot has always fueled our imagination for years. And with the new Falcon Project and the hard work of people like William Barnes, I think that day will be coming very soon. So good luck, man. Thanks for coming on tonight. William, stay on the line 1 second. From the haunted backroads of America, this has been another Legend X Spook Show exclusive. Special thanks to tonight's guest, Serial Weird Midnight Syndicate, for the tunes and creations by Souls Denounced. Guys, make sure to check out William's website at falcon-project.com. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter?
Because the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter love you.
We love you guys. Have a great week.